Die groot trek saam Dopie en Nina, weekdae tussen 3 en 6.
Ons het bietjie rugby bespreek met Rikki, ons het gister bietjie die rugby bespreek. Soos ons sê, dit was dan nie die mooiste rugby wat ons al gesien het van die Bokke af nie. Maar 'n wen is 'n wen en ons was oortuigende wenning soos wat Nina sê. As hulle kan wen op 'n dag wat hulle swak speel, imagine as hulle goed speel.
Ja.
Wat hulle alles kan vermag. Nou, saam met ons in die ateljee is een van die medeskrywers van die boek genaamd Twice the Glory. En dis Kanyiso Twaku. En hy was saam met Lloyd Bernard, was hy saam met die Bokke, so te sê die grootste bokspan in die geskiedenis in Frankryk. Thank you for your time, sir.
Good afternoon, guys.
Goeiemiddag. Goeiemiddag.
Sing soos meneer Ter Blanche nou.
Ek hoop nie jy praat van Eugene Ter Blanche.
Nee, dis Etienne Ter Blanche.
So, nie baie ver nie.
Nee, kan jy so very interesting read, and you guys had the opportunity to now travel with the team to Paris. Why did you guys go with the team?
How did you get to go?
What was the aim?
Well, I mean, it's a World Cup. First and foremost, it is, if you look at the Springboks' success over the past 2 World Cups, you realize that they're probably the most marketable international sporting brand South Africa has. Oh. So it made perfect sense to follow the World Cup. Remember that I actually was on the 2022 end of year tour, which was my third overseas box tour. I went on one in 2014 to Argentina. Played in Salta. Then I went to the 2017 one in New Zealand, where there was the 57 zip in Albany. It wasn't a great memory, but probably every rugby writer needs to go through that. And then I followed the box around in 2022, then Dublin, Marseille, I lost luggage, but it's another story for another day.
Dupie doesn't like the French either.
I don't like the French either.
Down south, they're very friendly. It's just a Nordic comment, so but you problematic. So Marseille was nice, then Genoa, that's where he played Italy, and then back to London for all the good reasons. So yeah, it looks back at the 6 years, because to just narrow it down to just one World Cup doesn't tell the story of what actually transpired. So now, I mean, if you look back at the fact that the Boks have never been able to sustain their World Cup success. If you look back at 1995, 1996, when Kitch Christie couldn't continue as coach because of illness, Andre Markgraaf took over. There was a set of circumstances that just saw the Boks unravel until Nick Mallet took over late 97, 17 and 0. But he then unraveled before the World Cup. So there hasn't been a sustained post-World Cup effort from the Boks. But what we saw now from 2018 onwards was that from that Wales test, building through England, and that year winning the World Cup and doing so again. And remember that the Boks did that World Cup win without a year of rugby because of COVID-19.
Yes.
It just made that success so much special. So it's one of those things that it's those bits of history that just needed to be documented.
Now, you take us through the whole process. And we couldn't wait to watch Chasing the Sun, the second one.
Yeah.
But you also take us through all of those feelings that the players had, that we as a nation had with every single game. I mean, from Dublin to, you know, Rassi, where he had this breakdown and saying, you know, guys, you can't play like this. We can't play like this. And then later to where Bongi was, you know, if it wasn't for Bongi, we didn't have a hooker in the World Cup.
Yeah, it's interesting. You find that it's quite interesting that Tom Curry's injured this weekend. He's not playing, so that saga takes a bit of a break for this weekend. Look, it's probably one of the most important things about touring is that you write whatever you see, but there's so much that comes into your mind that stays. And that accentuates the importance of touring. And I mean, one of the biggest prohibitive costs of touring is the exchange rate. It makes things very difficult. The South African press contingent at the World Cup was by far one of the smallest going around. Probably now it becomes imperative now for media houses, I mean, particular to actually plan for Australia, because if you look at what Rassi's putting in place now, it's very clear that there's a clear assault for the 2027 World Cup. But back to the book in particular, that bird, it's not a bird's eye view. It's like you put yourself in the foot of at the feet of a spectator. You watch what they do. Every little moment, every little thing that they do matters. You look at what they do. You look at the body language. You look at how happy they are on a particular day. I mean, the bongi vodka thing was so interesting because it became the entire narrative before the World Cup final. I remember in one of the training sessions, there were lots of non-English media. There were lots of New Zealand, Asian, French media who were there because they wanted to see Bongi. And one of the tremendous, and I highlighted in the book, one of the most dramatic things that Bongi did, because they were only given 15 minutes to watch them warm up, and then after that they move away. Bongi literally came out in the last minute, greeted everyone, and all the attention went to him. And then in the captain's run, and then Sports Minister Zizikola then came to him, greeted him, made them, and but kind of, they started all joking about it. But it's one of those where it may be visualized on YouTube and all the other video digital streams, but when you're there, you are able to also see the emotions, what it means to players, what it means to coaches, and how coaches function. Because one of the things, and it's explained with Jacques is so good at hiding his emotions. But when he actually had an opportunity to sit down and speak to him, it was probably one of the few times where then you could see why he gets so intense and how much he loves the game.
So if you look at Chasing the Sun, obviously they had these organized interviews that they've obviously filmed.
Yeah.
How close did you guys get to the players? Did you also have time that you could spend with them? How did it work?
At the World Cup, it was tricky. We were unable to get book players for the book for this particular book. But at the World Cup, a lot hinged on how well you knew the players. A lot of them were quite friendly. Eben had a lot of time to greet everyone. Vili had a lot of time to greet everyone. Sia was Sia. He greeted everyone. You get the players who are reserved, but I think the more they saw you, the more accustomed they got to you. I mean, Dwayne Vermeulen, for example, I actually often bumped into him at every turn. There was a particular tortilla spot where you often met. You'd often chat about the weather, if he's gone to feed the, if he actually tasted the fish. I needed to remind myself that he actually played in Toulon, so he's actually quite familiar. And funny thing is that now that he's actually in the coaching ranks, you still get along quite well. You'll greet and ask how are the kids and all of that. I think also the building of relationships also starts at franchise level. It also highlights why it's important to go to training sessions, because if the Bulls players or the Lions players, even though they're a small minority in the box, they see you quite often. That FaceTime makes it matters for them, because they see you at training, they'll see you at a game, they'll greet you, then they see you again at another training session. So it helps build that cordial relationship. And I think with the coaches will have a bit more freedom to speak because of their senior roles, and every so often they need to be hold ambassadorial roles for the team. So also it becomes much easier to build the relationship. They'll see you at training, every so often they'll ask you an opinion, what do you think of a certain player. You'll say, I think this, that. Whether they take it seriously or not is another story. But one of the things, traveling with the teams, even if it's here, even if it's overseas, it helps build relationships.
So being in such close proximity to them, what is the one thing that you picked up about the box when you were there?
They're a close-knit unit. They're a band of brothers. One of the challenges with putting teams together is that you've got different players with different personalities and different identities. To get players to sing from the same hymn book is probably the most important thing, because how a Jasper thinks is going to be very different to how a Dwayne thinks. And remember that Jasper's from Upington, Dwayne is from Nelspruit. They may be Afrikaans speaking, but they're from two very distinct backgrounds. So if you're, as a coach and a coaching staff, you're then able to get players to think from the same hymn book, and just to get them to understand the ethos and the values of why they are doing this. And one of the things that came across, and they spoke of it very well, I think one of the key things that actually spoke to us about this was how Jean Klein actually stood up for Bongi Mbonambi in the first press conference in the lead up to the final, where there were so many, I have to say, English term is just leaving me at the moment, but they were very parochial questions that were coming from the English media that were trying to slight Bongimbo Nambi's character and Jean Klein. They would have played together for a short while at the Stormers when Bongi just joined, but he put a firm front foot forward for his teammates and Bongi's a good guy. And that's when you often realize that even if, let's say, players may not always see eye to eye on particular things, but when it came to presenting a united front, they did that so well. They did that so well throughout the World Cup and in all the interactions I've had with them over the years.
But is it true if I say that can't be faked? Like, you can't fake that united front.
No, you can't.
Yeah, I mean, amazing.
They were together from, I'll use the World Cup example, they were together from the end of July until the end of October.
Mm.
So you can't fake that front. You literally, these are the guys you wake up, the monster, Vakavort, die monster. So every morning, every afternoon, these guys, it actually becomes a point where you actually chop and change your lunch mates, where you see on a particular day when they go out, Franco Mostert will go out with someone, oh, he loves golf, by the way, will play golf with someone else, most probably Vili, because they're probably the two best golfers. But you see every so often that a different teammate will be walking around with a different teammate, another teammate. So, and remember that they've been in this environment since 2021 in particular, because remember that they covered that British and Irish Lions a period where they had to stay together in the hotel, where their tour was nearly cancelled because of COVID-19 issues. So those are the kind of bonds that you build with players. Yes, every so often you need to blow steam and spend time with family. And also what also helped is that for the bulk of that World Cup, they were with their families and the venues where they stayed. There was this other hotel they stayed in. It's very nice. Le Domaine de Vanneau. It's in the north of... It's in the north of, you could probably say it's in the Bella Bella area, but it's quite a train line riding through it. So they were there with the family, so they actually know each other, not just on the field but off the field. They know their family, the wives know each other, the kids know each other. So there's a family environment that's built that allows players to actually express themselves and be themselves.
Now, do you think that is something that Rassie brought to the team, that sense of unity between the players? Because, I mean, like you said, they become a family. And if you want to do back-to-back World Cups, you need to really trust the guy that's next to you and know he's going to have your back. Is that Rassie's influence?
Well, trust the man that's next to you. That's effectively the pinpoint, the cornerstone of South Africa's defensive system, that you know that if he can't make the tackle, you'll be able to do so. And that actually slips into how they actually communicate and operate as human beings, because to build a team over a 7-year period, now counting this year, because the players who started then are still a very core part of the team, you have to get to know the player, you have to get to trust that player, and no team functions without trust. I don't know, there are a lot of people who use the T at the start of team for a lot of reasons, but trust is the cornerstone of every team, because if you can trust your teammate, you can be able to trust them with a lot of things, not just what happens on the field but happens off the field. Because remember that you get some players who know each other from a long way back.
Yes,
I mean, like a Jean Klein, for example, came from Water School, Linden, went to Stellenbosch. You'd find that he'll bond a bit more with guys, with the coaches, because he wouldn't have come through a proper schooling system. But you'd find that Esia Kolisi would have grown up with an Eben. They would have met at Craven Week in 2009 in East London. They started playing under 20 rugby together. They grew through all the international stages together. I mean, it becomes pertinent when you look back at Sia's 11 years of international rugby. The first person who greeted him when he made his debut against Scotland in Mobella was Eben. Elizabeth already had a year of test match rugby and was always looking like someone who's going to rack up more than 100 caps. So that trust is one in between players, and once that trust is fostered and engendered, it then becomes easier for a coach to work with that trust then.
Ons gaan nou 'n bietjie verder gesels met Kanyusa oor sy boek Twice the Glory, en 'n bietjie hoor wat was die agter die skerm stories. Saam met ons in die studio Kanyusa Twaku, en ons gesels oor 'n boek wat hy saam met Lloyd Bernard geskryf het, Twice the Glory, The Making of the Greatest Bok Team in History. Now, I think it's an interesting concept to say it's twice the glory making of the greatest Bok team in history. But now, the big question is, are we already seeing the same signs that we did after we won the World Cup in, what was it, 2019? No, 2020. 2019, yes.
Yeah.
Are we seeing the same signs? Because we're wondering now, has Rassie got a plan? Is he going to take us to number three? And you've been there for both. What do you think?
Well, there is a plan in place. I mean, Rassie chops and changes the team. We would have seen on Saturday that with his 7-1 bench split, he started a lot of his fringe forwards. There are some fringe forwards who are slightly old. Thomas Tutoi, he's, I think he's 30. Kwaha Smith, he's also 30. But they still have a longer term plan. Volker Low, he's also 30. So there are players who still have more than enough.
Yeah, 30 isn't that old.
No, especially for front row forwards and loose forwards. The concern would be around Eben Etzebeth, for example, like 130 odd test caps. 29 actually, Peter Steph Tutoi, how long can he continue playing the manner in which he plays? Can Siya Kolisi continue to write checks that his body can still cash? Already you can see that with the backs, the changes are coming in ever so often. I mean, Francois de Klerk is not on the tour. I enjoy calling him by his full name, but
Francois de Klerk.
Yeah. So he's not on the tour. He's already 33. So you can see that this year alone, they've been signed. I think the biggest game that showed us the hands of where Rice is going. If you look at that Portugal game, in Bloemfontein, there were so many youngsters who were given opportunity. Jan Hendrik Wessels, Andre Hugo Venter, Tutu Komtrunu, Ruan Venter, who would have been on tour if he wasn't injured. Jan Hendrik Wessels would have been on tour if he wasn't injured. So there are a lot of players who were given opportunities, but Rice also did say that this particular tour is looking to go 3-from-3. The last time they did that was back in 2013 under Heineke Meyer and John de Villiers. So there are tours that are given priority to win, and I think this is the one. If you look at the rugby championship, there was a mandate to develop and win that happened, but I think with this particular tour,
they just want to win. Yes. Yeah. So do you think the Ebens, the Peter Steffs, the Sias is key to winning the next World Cup?
They are, even on and off the field. They'll be 36 by then, and also one needs to be mindful of how much rugby they'll be playing
in between till then.
So they stay in South Africa, they'll be managed well. As much as they will be contracted by the Sharks, Eben and Sen in particular, the amount of rugby that they will play will be managed. But also, though, one also needs to understand that rugby, as much as it is a sport for wiser heads and all body shapes and sizes, it still all will almost always favor the youngest, stronger athlete. So which is why there has been a drive to develop players. If you look at how the opportunities that Rassie has given to younger players, especially this year, start even in 2022. If you look at that Bloemfontein game against Wales in particular, where the likes of Kirtley Arendses made their debuts, now they've become critical components of this team. Apelele Fassie played in that game. Tudu Komtunu made his debut in the game. So there are a lot of players who have been phased in stage by stage, who will then start to assume important roles. I mean, the loose head prop position becomes an important position because there's no clarity on Stephen Kitsoff's neck injury at the moment and whether it will allow him to play more rugby.
But it's not looking good.
Yes. And if you look back at the fact that Stephen Kitsoff has been playing professional rugby since he stepped out of Paul Roos, that was in 2010.
Wow.
The following season, he was playing under 19 and 21, played Currie Cup and Super Rugby in the same year. So that'll take its toll. Eben, for example, would have had a bit of a longer path because he matriculated from Tigerberg 2009 and then only then made his Bok debut 3 years later. But at every point, he left a calling card. So now there will be changes, there will be injuries. So what Rice is that, I mean, Ron Noki in particular, he becomes a very interesting character for the boxing that he's bided his time. He's 26. So at 26, he's got a good 4 more years, a good 8 more years left in him. He's got this World Cup cycle. Stacey, he's got another World Cup cycle in him. And especially with the way that he plays, he's got a proper Toyota Land Cruiser engine on him. So he's going to last. If he stays injury free, he's got a long career ahead of him. But there are also other players who may not cut the franchise mustard, but will go on and play overseas and still become important for the box.
I'm just worried about the star factor, because if you look at the Springbok team at the moment, everybody in every single position is a star player.
Yes.
This is where New Zealand found themselves about 10 years ago at their peak. And I'm just worried that all of the young players coming in now, yes, we have some depth, but yeah, do we have that star power? Because it does give you a psychological edge, doesn't it?
No, it does. No, it does.
The only guy I can think of, and he messed up a little bit now, that's got that star factor for me, is maybe somebody like, what do you call it? Sacha Feinberg and Kumi Zulu.
Well, look, he'll be fine. Look, his knee needs to be managed. Yes. His knee does need to be managed. But if they manage him well, and one of the things that Rassie's done well is to manage players along their limitations. Remember that we talk of star players. Andre Pollard is only 30. He still has another World Cup in him.
Okay. Andre is an old man.
Andre feels so old.
But he's been, I mean, remember, Andre was the one who literally ate stuff all out of Paul Gymnasium, played a World Cup, won an under 20 World Cup while still in matric.
Wow.
So, I mean, he's been around for 12
Yay
years.
Yay for Andre.
So if you think about it, he literally
Even
won
if
the
he's
World Cup.
Old, we can put him in as a reserve at least.
But you see, but it's that kind of intellectual capacity that you still need in the team to take it forward. Which is why, like, a Mali Libok, despite the kicking issues that I think can be sorted, becomes important, because if you look at the evolution of the Bok team at the moment, he's the one guy who actually speaks to all the strengths that a Tony Brown wants from a Flav. The kicking will come right. The same thing with you look at the same qualities that a Grant Williams brings as a scrum off, especially that his passing is coming along. If you're looking for someone who's, now I can't say close to Fury Dupree, but who looks like somewhere close to Fury Dupree in terms of being able to manage a game without a strong 10, is a Jaden Hendrickson. And the most important part is that a lot of these players are developing in a winning environment, vis-a-vis 2016, where a lot of the guys made their debuts. Bongi Mbonambi made his debut in that era. Steven Kitsoff made his debut in that era. Eben was close to 50 caps. Jesse Creel was still a junior player, but all those players walked into an environment where there was just a drop off in terms of experienced players then retiring. So what Rassie is trying to do here is to blood all of these junior players while the senior players are still there. So by the time some will have drop-offs in terms of form and fitness,
they've got that experience.
Yes. And remember that there are also guys who haven't played. Ludovic Diakha hasn't played test match rugby for a good 2 and a bit years. He becomes very important in that
still young as well.
He's still yes. But the key thing is that because he hasn't played rugby, he's still got he's had a fair share of injuries, the health and injury issues. But he now becomes an important factor because he comes in very fresh, because his body now hasn't been put through the demand of test match rugby. I think when he comes back, how he then readapts to test
match. But he also has the experience already of being in the box squad.
50 plus caps. He won the 2019. He came off in the final in 2019. So there are players who are injured, but who will still play a critical role because they haven't played test match rugby. And it's highlighted in the book that when they didn't play in 2020, it played a very critical role in that it gave a lot of the players an extra year of rugby. I think had South Africa played in 2020, I don't think Dwayne Vermeulen would have had the legs to get
no.
in 2020.
No, absolutely.
Because he was free of rugby that year, his body rested an entire year, and that allowed him to push through just enough to play a critical role. So as much as sometimes we look back at injuries and say injuries are disruptive, but for some players, it gives them an important period to rest and recharge.
Well, we'll be back with Kanyiso in a little bit. Solid was Kanyiso Twaku in Asian from Twice the Glory. So I need to know, seeing that you were there and you saw a lot of things, especially with the players, and you followed them around, what was the one standout moment during this whole campaign, and I'm talking about the last World Cup only, that you really, you know, that moment will forever be with you?
It's easy. Very, very, very easy. So at the conclusion of the New Zealand press conference, it's in the book, but I'll tell it.
Yeah,
the
you must.
So they started changing the livery. So they used red livery for the teams. So this being my first World Cup, I'd never seen things being changed for winning teams. I mean, I've covered a lot of cup finals in South Africa where they'll have the same platform for the same press conference platform for all the teams. And then there was these guys who just appeared carrying gold livery. Then I just looked at Henrik Grenier, who's at Rapport and Netwerk. We just looked at each other like, so this is how it feels to be a world champion. They change everything for you here. And then, so as a small South African group, so we all like literally sat bunched together. And then they started changing the livery. They tried to do it as quickly as possible. Then one of the world rugby officials said, no, take your time. They're still having handshakes. And then after that, then there was a silence. There was a good 10-minute silence where, you know that, you know when the air is heavy and swung with expectation?
Mm.
Yeah, then you could hear Sia singing in the background.
Wow.
Then you hear him coming. You can hear the plitter-platter of feet is coming. And then he sits down and then he says, you're my daughter. Mm-hmm. And you know, as a South African, you know when a man just sits down
after and he relaxes,
long,
yeah.
Yeah. And then, like for us, we knew what he said. We knew what he was feeling. Like for someone else, you know when you've spent a long day working, you get there, you just get your beer, and you're like, this is a long day.
Mm.
But you could see for him, it's like, this is a proper mission accomplished.
Yeah.
And you know that.
Now they can relax.
Yeah, you said that like, you're my daughter, came from the pit of his stomach, it's like, finally we're here. Mm-hmm. And when you look back at the story of that 3 weeks, it's from 29, 28 to 16, 15 to 1 point. So we just looked at each other as just South African journalists and we were like, yeah. Ons ken wat dit gebeur.
Ons weet wat hulle weet.
No one's weird. And then Jacques came in and you know Jacques, it was one of the weirder things where I probably told him in the interview that you should have showed a bit more emotion. I mean, for the route that he took as a coach. I mean, I was at his press conference here in January 2020 when he was announced as Springbok coach, and there were a lot of doubters because he's not a person who played rugby. I mean, he went to great college. He played for the Crocs, the seventh team. So he literally had to learn the trade of rugby, not just playing, but through coaching as an SNC before then he transitioned into defense. So when you looked at how they sat, and they calmly, you could see Sia is not a person to hold back on his emotion, hold back on his joy. But Jacques being stoic, like it's a big moment, but he still remained calm about it. And then the nicest part was that they then invited us to come take a picture of the trophy.
Mm.
So that's when I realized how much it meant for them, because the interactions we had were most of the time quite cordial through the World Cup. And Jacques, if you walked past, you passed in the passage, he'd always stop and ask you how you're feeling. I see the same. The bulk of the coach is the same, actually. So we weren't standoffish, but that particular 20-30 minutes from when they finished delivery, had the press conference, when Sia walked in, there were lots of high moments. There were lots of nice moments. I mean, one of the funny parts, we looked back, one of the funny parts was that they changed the schedule ahead of, I think it was a Tonga game. And we weren't able to make that 15 minutes. And it happened to be that training session when Malcolm Marks were injured. Obviously, we weren't going to see that happen because it would have happened past the 15 minutes. We met at a restaurant outside the Mayo Stadium with a box off and trade. And we had a proper, I think Steve Haig, one of the photographers, complain about, they should have changed this, they should have changed that. But then by the time the semifinal came round, we actually started laughing about that. They actually, it may have been a good thing not to witness that because it was one of the stories of the tournament outside of Bongi's later drama with Thomas Curry. But probably that particular moment where we just watched what it meant for that moment, we saw what it meant to them. Everything else that we watched on Chasing the Sun, we're like, some of these things we could piece together, because another funny thing is, I mean, watching Chasing the Sun, my daughter would often ask, like, what happened on this particular date? And I'm like, no, that happened.
Mm.
And then a particular episode, then there'd be one shot of me walking past and painting.
Mm-hmm.
And then my daughter, what were you doing? And I'm like, no, just moving around, taking videos. But it happened every moment. Every time, like in going through the book and writing, and one of the things I did, I enjoy doing is taking pictures of things.
Mm.
And in going through the chapters and consulting with Lloyd, if I needed to go back to a particular moment, I just go to my phone and be like, I must have a picture of a particular moment. And it so happened with the changing of the livery, I actually had the picture. Like, then it became so easy to recall. Oh, now yeah. I remember how this thing actually happened. But yeah, there were a lot of nice anecdotal moments. One of them. Oh, how do I forget this one? On the way back from one of the training sessions with the park, ahead of the Ireland game. So to travel around Paris, you needed a... There's a particular card that you got. So Hendrik and I struggled to get the card because language barrier. One is Afrikaans speaking, one is Xhosa speaking. So actually the one language we used properly was Sesotho. So we spoke well in Sesotho, and that was probably how we... I've traveled with Hendrik before, it was for the third time, but we generally speak in Sesotho. And now we now need to find a person to speak, to help us to get a card. So it's a Navigo card. So we get a Navigo card. All goods and all zones pass, 35 euros. So that allows us to get anywhere in Paris. So there's Jan de Koning from Rugby 365. There's Liam Delcom and Valen Curtly. So they traveled. But I think Valen was sorted with her card. So we're now traveling back to Paris. So these... marshals come and they're like, can we see your Navigo pass? So Jan and Liam have a bunch of tickets, like small tickets. The problem was now, those tickets aren't valid for that route. So now Liam is negotiating. He loves French culture and he can speak a bit of French. He tries to appeal to this gentleman's nature. The gentleman's nature, he's not having it. I'm like, sorry, monsieur, you don't have a ticket, you don't have a Navigo card. £35, fine. They were grumpy after that. And we thought, okay, let's be a bit quiet about this. By the time we got to God, you know, they're like, guys, how much is £35 cost? And then they started breaking up. And after every time now, we then had to take them to a Navigo block and then sorted them out. Like, it became the running joke every time we called return, like, where's the £35?
Before we let you go, can you saw the time has flown by. It was so nice to have you with us on air. But what is the one thing that we can learn from the Springboks?
Teamwork makes a dream work. There is nothing that you can't do.
So it's just life. It's not just a saying that you throw
no,
around.
No. No man's an island. No man is an island. There are people who try to say we are self-made. No. You need people along the way to help you. Mm. To succeed to win a World Cup, you need a team to do so. To succeed in any sort of project, you need a team of people to do so. And you need people to be on the same page. You need people who have different strengths. Mm. You can't have people who have the same strengths because you can't complement those weaknesses, because where a Frans Malherbe is strong, he may be weak in another area. Mm. Then the Vincent Koch and the Trevor Nyakane will be able to help in that particular environment. And one of the key things that Russell is always able to identify a weakness and find a person who will help sort out that weakness. I mean, now in the departure of Felix Jones, one of the key things that Russell always talked about was improving the attack. And what did he do? Went to coach New Zealander. We may not always understand how South African rugby culture works, but Tony Brown has played enough rugby to understand how South African rugby culture works, played for the Sharks, played in South Africa with the Highlanders. I mean, he beat us in Cape Town in 2001 where he kicked those four penalties and it went Newland. So it's teamwork and learning how to coexist in an environment, because on this physical in the Mensa, we have a lot of different things, we have a lot of different energies that we bring, we have different backgrounds, and if you're able to merge those and find a melting pot that works for everyone, and then it's something we can go forward with.
Well, fantastic advice, and it's a fantastic read. As jy nog nie het nie, kry vir dit herleef die wêreldbeker. Soos wat hulle dit herleef het twice.
Like a Kersfees present.
Ja, this is a great present for Christmas, especially if you like
a rugby fanatic.
Ja, en ek meen wie is nie? Jy weet elke Suid-Afrikaner is 'n rugby coach anyway, mos. couch coach. So twice the glory, the making of the greatest book team in history is nou beskikbaar, en dit vat jy die hele journey, so wat hy gesê het, daai verligting vir Sia met die Yoma Dota anekdote wat hy gehad het, van wie is Jock nou eintlik, deur na Coalisie, die bomb squad, alles wat gebeur het met Bongi, die hele ding tot op die einde, gaan herleef dit deur 'n boek. So as mamma nie wil hê jy moet te veel TV kyk nie, nou kan jy boek lees en dan twee vleep met een klap. Can you so thank you so much for your time?
Thank you very much for having me.
Kuier maandag tot vrijdag saam Dobie en Nina, 3 tot 6, net hier op die Groot Trek op Groot FM 90.5.